Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works.
You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
Hey, everybody. Lisa and Dean here. This week, other than Legion, of course, we have only been focused on two other shows that really matter right now in our hemisphere, and that is The Boys, which has dropped its first season 8-episode arc on Amazon.
Stop! In the name of the law!
Oh no, Fourth Glass caught me.
I am gonna sit right here until the cops come. You're not a cat burglar. You're a filthy pig. Say it. You're a filthy pig who likes to eat ass.
And also our rewatch of Preacher in preparation for its fourth and final season on AMC. So we're not going to do our normal intro because that's all Dean and I have been watching. But we are happy to announce and excited to say that in advance, and maybe only minutes in advance, of the Preacher season premiere, which airs this Sunday, August 8th, they're going to be airing the first and second episodes of season 4. Mike TV is going to do a Garth Ennis extravaganza episode. And if you don't know who Garth Ennis is, well, you should, because he is the author of the source material for both Preacher and The Boys, two shows that we really, really love and have a lot to say about. So we're going to bring you a Garth Ennis extravaganza episode where we touch on The Boys as a series. We're not going to do a scene-by-scene breakdown, but we are going to talk about our favorite moments and highlights. And then we're going to talk about Preacher and where the series has left off with all of the characters so far. And we're going to have a really special guest episode joining us. Let's just leave that as a tease, folks. If you're a Radio Labyrinth fan, you ought to know by now who has already said they want to join us. Dean, you want to give a hint on who's going to join us for the for these next episodes? Excellent. So we're excited. We hope you listen to those. We hope you have watched The Boys. We hope you are doing a rewatch of Preacher. It's just as good the second time. We recommend start at season 3, episode 5, entitled The Coffin, and just go all the way through episode 10. You'll be good to go, ready, primed and ready for season 4, ready to play some checkers.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
You like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
Carrie, she needs me.
I know.
I can't help like this.
I know, but you'll need me too in case you need to find your way back or...
But you can do what you do, sit down. I can't. What?
This is Mike TV, episode 10. We're in the double digits, Dean.
Oh, and I called it last week. It's been ramping up, and of course they had to pump the brakes and slow it down right before the end.
Oh yeah, episode 10 of Mike TV. This is Legion, season 3, episode 6, entitled Chapter 25. And yes, definitely bottle episode.
Right, as of last week I said was chapter 20. Whoa, this week was chapter 20.
Oh, no. Oh, no. So you didn't like it. Overall, let's hear them.
Let's put it this way. I did not like it because I like every episode. If you know why I'm even on the show to begin with, it's because last year on Radio Labyrinth, I week by week harassed Tim and Jeff about talking about Legion, even though it got too crazy for them. But this is one of those types of episodes where if I finally get someone to watch Legion, they watch it and they just go, what the fuck is this shit? And then they turn it off.
Right. Which I think probably people watching this week might have done that.
Yeah, I mean, people who are bought in, but right. it didn't, except for like the last 2 minutes, it really didn't push the full narrative ahead. I know there's thematic elements that are going to have effect, mm-hmm. but, and of course, the Sid episode, nobody really likes Sid.
You know, they gave us a Sid episode last season that was pretty good, but people complained about that one too.
Right.
And I know this was a Sid episode, but because it was also a Melanie and Oliver episode, I liked it. I want to, maybe by the end of the episode, I'll convince you.
Well, we'll see. You got a lot of work to do, but you know what?
Well, okay. So my thoughts are it did take too long to do what it needed to do this late in the game. There were times, and we were actually tweeting about it, I actually stayed up and watched this one live, and I was like, dang it, I'm going to live tweet during this one. And it was awesome seeing you on there too. And so suddenly we're just having our own conversation about it. But yep. We were both like, come on, get there. This is taking too. I couldn't believe they were going to do the whole episode almost with this. But when they started her out as a baby, I guess you had to know that was coming. But then introducing new characters, my goodness. But I have to say, rap battle. I loved the rap battle. I didn't love it the first time I watched it. I loved it the second time I watched it.
I was actually going to say the exact same thing. I got wildly excited when Oliver says rap battle. Mm-hmm. I got pumped. I kind of got too like, oh, this is like two kind of lame white guys rapping when I watched it the first time. But when I watched it the second time, I put the subtitles on. Yep. I like listened to what they were saying. There was some silliness in it still, but I enjoyed it. And you know how I am. I enjoy all the musical elements of Legion. I know even last season, and we mentioned this earlier this season, you weren't quite a fan of the Behind Blue Eyes battle between David and Farouk, but this was that same concept. This was, a mixture of that and the dance battle between David and Oliver and Lenny in the club at the beginning of season two. So. Right. I liked it. I was into it.
I think what in hindsight, I think what I didn't like about the singing battle from last season, were they lip syncing?
I think it just made it seem, you know, it looked didn't more lip syncing.
Like really, yes.
Yeah, it looked more lip syncing. They're always lip syncing.
Well,
but,
of course.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like they were really singing where this rap battle, even if they were lip syncing, it just felt it was great. It was great. So we'll get there. But the rap battle was great. Makes me appreciate every other musical number all that much more. The lyrics were insane for it.
I didn't realize, I think that's the first time on like regular TV I've heard someone tell someone they're going to slap them with their cock.
I know. But what I ultimately think about this episode was it was a fable. It was to teach Sid a moral, moral to the story kind of thing. Isn't that what a fable is?
Yes.
So I think we're gonna dig out what the moral is here. And it was a Sid episode, and neither one of us are huge Sid fans, so maybe that's why it was like, wah, wah.
Yeah, I think what I don't like most about it, and this is just me being biased, and I know that there are people who are very heavy Sid fans on Twitter and online, and if you say anything bad about Sid, you're, you know, apparently a sexist of some sort. But I just don't like the fact that they are still setting Sid up to be the ultimate hero in this show. Because if that's what this turns out to be, if David is the bad guy and Sid ends up being the ultimate good guy, that's not what I'm rooting for. You know me, if David's the bad guy, I want it to be because him and the Shadow King have destroyed the world together and they're living in harmony or disharmony, right. Enslaving the entire world. I don't want anyone to defeat him.
I know. Sid's going to be the hero. That's going to happen.
But here's the thing where maybe. my hope is, that's my hope is that she may be seemingly the hero, but maybe we get another twist and she thinks is happening and still fails in the end. So I'm not bought into Sid. I've never really have been. I'm just not bought into it.
Before we get in scene by scene, can I just bring up one thing that's really just been nagging me, like just a little gnat? the episode from the week before where we got the trailer for this week's episode clearly showed that creepy doll in several scenes. And that doll was not in this. So that was like a trick. That was a Noah Hawley special right there.
I knew you were going to bring that up. and I think I kind of half mentioned this last week where I even thought that those were scenes from older episodes. I think they've gotten to the point now, and they do this sometimes with previews, you know, where it's like they show things to remind you. But yes, they did imply that angriest boy in the world would be in here somewhere, and he never was.
We got a headless doll, which was creepy in its own right, especially being named Hetty.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into it. So, and in fact, the show opens and gets right into it. No previously on, no potentially on. You know, no fancy word on. It just got straight into it. We open to Oliver in a field and trees and woods, and he's collecting trash in a wagon and seemingly useless items. We learn quickly that he's in the astral plane. So this is the astral plane forest. He says things in the astral plane are that where they are is like a magnet for lost dreams. And then he mentions when people lose their minds, they end up there. And then he finds Sid as a baby and takes her home to Melanie. On his way, or right outside his front door, he encounters a wolf. The wolf
Spook.
Wants the wolf. Mm-hmm, the wolf wants the baby. He, of course, says no, and Melanie runs out and shoos him away. It was very hilarious. He, before he runs off, he says to be sure to tell the baby as they're raising her about the Holocaust and about herpes. And then as he's running off, he says, don't forget
chlamydia. Yeah.
And I loved the way Melanie and Oliver address each other here. They just call each other husband and wife and, you know, husband, wife. And Melanie says, what have you brought? And he's just so like, oh, you know, a sock, a pen, a baby. And she immediately takes the baby in as her own. So they are planning to now raise this baby. What did you think of this opening scene?
Okay. I like the scene. Here's what and even from the very beginning, I think here is where my problem with this episode was it doesn't really make sense with everything else we've seen so far.
It slowed the pace down dramatically.
Not even that. It's just, is this pre that 3-year jump that we saw at the end of last season?
I think it's what's been going on
before then.
Oh,
because you remember at the very end of last season, we saw the 3-year jump and they're back in the ice cube.
Right. So this is before so somehow they're going to end up in the ice cube. So
surely this has to be before then.
So what's happening with Melanie and Oliver is completely baffling to me. I have no explanation, no understanding. I love their little miniature world. We'll talk about how it's revealed where they are, or I guess where they are. Because they actually discuss how they know they're in the astral plane.
Right,
they know it. So it must be after the events that occurred in the Le Desolée at the end of last season. Perhaps when everybody else came back, Farouk had control of them, right? So he must have left them in the astral plane.
Well, and you know what? Maybe we can even think of, because he does say people who lose their minds end up here. So maybe after he had stolen their minds, maybe that's why they are there. That would make sense. And I didn't think about that before.
Oh, yeah, good point. And they do still show, we see that same throughout the episode where Oliver forgets words and mixes up nonsensical words, says ostrich for something.
Right.
Not even.
So that makes sense. But here's what doesn't make sense to me is that when David steals Sid's mind,
mm-hmm.
that means he doesn't own. So that means we are to believe now that her mind is not stuck in David. So he did not absorb, because I think a lot of people would have assumed, especially based, isn't that in the comics kind of how Legion is, where he
sees,
like he absorbs people almost, like their minds.
Right.
But in this, even though he takes her mind now wanders to the astral plane, and she's able to wake up later on, which I know we aren't, or that's a jump, but so I guess his power in this is he's not stealing people's minds. Because if that were the case, then how would her mind end up in the astral plane if he took the mind into the cabin or into the house the last episode? Like, that's what kind of broke the even the beginning concept of this episode to me, was that it just, it almost seemed like a majority of this episode just defied continuity for the rest of the entirety of the season.
I'm going to have to think about it, because I've been so on the fence with this episode, because I see that, right? And then I just, I want to forgive it, because it's freaking Melanie and Oliver. We've wanted them all, or I have. I love Melanie and Oliver. I love Oliver. I think he's great. And Jermaine Clement and Jean Smart, come on, they are just fantastic. And I thought they had been sorely missed this season. So I loved the idea of dedicating an episode to them. Just, they really were on full display. They were just so good. What got me, this setup didn't bother me so much. All right, we'll get there. We'll get there, because I'm not quite with you yet on it. I could be persuaded, but I want to talk myself out of it.
And
I can't do it with this opening scene, because I was the same way. I was like, Sid as a baby, what? We're going to watch her grow up. This is not what we need right now.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem is the timing of this episode. That's really what it is. It's the fact that if we had 5 episodes left, I don't think I'd minded this nearly as much. It's the fact that we only had 3 episodes prior to this, and now you're spending in one of a third of what we have left, the entirety of the episode for the most part, on this thematic fable.
Now, do you think though that, okay, David does have control of Sid's mind, that what we saw last episode with all of the legions, you know, kind of pulling her in, means that he does have her, which is why whatever's left of her when she has lost her mind has to go to the astral plane and start all over as a baby. It's the only way to regain control. She has to grow up again and start all over. So I think it's both. So, you know, let's follow that thread through this episode and see if it holds.
All right. Well, you lead the way. We'll discuss as we go.
Because I do think David has control of her.
But how does he still have, like, so then what was the whole point of this if he has control of her the whole time?
Well, because she had to gain her control back, and this was the only way to do it.
But then why was David not ever present in any of this? Like, so is she not in him at all anymore?
Switch. Yeah, he's not paying attention, right?
Yeah, but how does she steal her out of his own mind if he's, I don't know, it doesn't make
sense. Well, okay, how does the astral plane work?
I don't know, it's not real.
For that matter, how do you battle through a rap battle?
Okay, moving.
Okay, all right. All right, so I'm intrigued by the wolf. You want to just talk about this actor for a second? Because I was not familiar with him. I talked about how we were tweeting, and you did mention a couple times. Say his name.
Yes, Jason Mantzoukas. I am a big fan of his. He's an actor on many things. He started off most notably in The League. He's on the How Does This Get Made podcast, which is like his most constant role, but he's been in several movies. I won't even try to start naming him, because he's been in a lot of things lately, but several movies, several shows. Very funny actor. The way he acts in this episode is like how he kind of acts in general. Yeah, very over-the-top, silly type of person, but I loved him in this. I thought his whole role, the big bad wolf kind of being the symbolism of growing up too fast and corrupting innocent people, I like that idea. I did like that concept of this fable being the parents trying to raise their kids slowly and the big bad wolf trying to, like, teach them about the holiday. Hey, she's a baby. hey, talk to her about the Holocaust. Tell her about herpes. Tell her about chlamydia. Like, tell her about the terrible things as opposed to tell her about good things.
Right. It was a great fable for those types of parallels. I mean, I thought it did a really good job in that regard. And I think the only way for this to unfold is Sid needed something to be so traumatic to make her revert to this state. Okay. So this is in this opening scene, after they do take the baby in, we do see a pan out. The camera pans way, way, way out, way over the top of the trees and further, further out. And as it goes further out, we see that where they are actually living is in an outdoor planter, like say outside off of an apartment rail, off of like a deck of an apartment. I loved this idea of a little miniature world of them running around in a little teeny tiny world. So I thought that was just the best. I know that's not what it is, but I loved that that scale that the show showed us.
Yeah, and then later on they almost like move out of that world into a new mini world, like when they move to the city, right?
Right.
Because that's the idea.
I think it's still within the same world.
Right, but it's like they move out of the one mini world, move into like the bigger mini world. Like, you know, I like that idea where it is the astral plane, so it's always a small miniature like concept of a world, but it's whatever they decide that they're going to be in. And I almost felt like the wolf was, his whole goal was destroying their innocent like new world, and every time he destroyed it, they had to move to a kind of shittier world or a more corrupted world.
Well, they definitely have the, what is it, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Is that the one? Little Red, no, yes, Goldilocks.
Riding Hood?
No, Little Red Riding Hood. Who's the one that blows the...
Oh, that was Three Little Pigs.
Shit. Okay.
Hey, this isn't a fairy tale podcast.
No, it's not. Three Little Pigs, thank you. They definitely were making...
Yes.
Allusions to those fairy tales, because we do see that they're living in a straw house. So we get an opening scene where Sid is about 5 years old, right? They're having dinner. Or no, this is when Sid is still a baby. I'm sorry. They're having a dinner scene. They talk about how Oliver mentions how their house is mighty straw, made of mighty straw, and it should definitely hold against the wolf. And we can hear the wolf outside huffing and puffing and trying to blow it down, which is just hysterical. Melanie says something about how they should probably move. Oliver decides he's going to go out and have a chat with the wolf. And when he goes outside, the wolf is with another new character. And I think this is where I was like, okay, what's the point of this?
Not a new character.
Cynthia. Was she not one of the,
she's she the freckle the girl that, yeah, she's the one I told you.
Freckles.
Earlier. Yep.
Oh no. Freckles is back. I didn't even notice that was the same. Well, you know what? You had an eye for her.
That's
they
right.
brought up
I
Noah
saw
Hawley.
Her. I said,
hey. Notice too. Well, still, she's a no-name character, except now she's Cynthia. Yeah. And the wolf introduces Cynthia to Oliver and says she's lost her innocence. She's given up all hope. And isn't that just great? And then Melanie comes out and says, listen, we're trying to have a good life here and raise our baby, and we need to keep the real world out. And she tells the wolf to go away, but invites Cynthia in for soup. And from there on, Cynthia is now living with them and being raised also as their daughter. So, okay. So then this is where I thought, we don't need her. The story could have done just fine without her. But I guess you were happy to see the return of said Cynthia.
Well, I will say that for the sake of what the story they're telling, she does play somewhat of a pivotal role for the lesson they do try to teach her.
100%.
I did love when he brings the baby home and he's coddling her. Melanie's coddling her for the first time, and she's like, what's do you think her name is? And Oliver says, the soup?
Yes.
No, the baby. Oh, it's Sydney. I do like that they still played on that confusion of words and the confusion of the mm-hmm. concepts. That was hilarious.
Well, and to even stretch that joke out even further, they definitely played a lot of this for laughs, which maybe we needed a little comic relief amongst all the time demons and horrible deaths and destruction that David has caused. But they say, go back to the joke. What's her name? Sid. And then her name's Sydney. And then Melanie says, how do you know that? And Oliver says, well, she told me. Yeah. And Sydney said, well, what else did she say? And he said, well, nothing. She's a baby.
Right.
Like, yeah. He's so dumbfounded that she would even ask about a baby speaking. Yes. Like, because yeah. He doesn't even remember that he just said it.
Yeah, it definitely, the Oliver always has that. Now, Clement kind of does this anyway with the things that he's in lately, but it always reminds me of almost the quick witticism of like 1980s, like Chevy Chase and like Caddyshack era of movies. Just that quick, like, repartee between the characters. And
yeah,
like that quick wit. That does always, and like I said, I did not enjoy this episode. It's just that I've enjoyed this season so much that this is not my favorite episode of the season.
I'll agree with that. But we're going to win you over.
Okay. All right. Let's keep going.
So our next scene is happy little montage scenes of Sid growing up. She's 5 years old now. We see her like running in fields with Cynthia. She's building a rock wall with Oliver. Then she and Cynthia are building a little fairy home, which was just adorable. Then we see her helping Oliver collect things in the wagon. And she's just kind of asking mundane questions that he's answering relatively well. And this is where she finds the headless doll and says that she's going to name her Hetty. Or maybe Oliver suggests she name her Hetty, but I thought that was very funny. This is also where she starts to run. She's running kind of in a direction where they weren't heading. And this is where he first calls her little bird and says, little bird, don't go that way. And she asks why. And he said, well, that's where the real world is. And she wants to see it. So he takes and shows her. And that is a really neat scene, that juxtaposition again with that, playing with the scale there of how that scene looked as they're looking out into this great big cityscape. And looking into the real world. But as they look on, he does promise to tell her about the real world when she's older. And then Sid, this is kind of the end of this scene, as they're headed home, Sid does meet the wolf, or she sees a dead fox, and then meets the wolf, and he discusses death with her. And then as she runs away from him, he shouts out asking her if she's been told about chlamydia yet. And don't worry, this is going to be a three beat. We're going to get the chlamydia joke punchline in a little bit. So how did you like these scenes first with Sid with Oliver and then Sid with Sid's first encounter with the wolf?
I do like that. I appreciate that the way they tell the story. I like the juxtaposition of the cityscape with the countryscape of the country being innocent and free of like corruption and pollution, the city being dirty and gross looking. And I also like that he refers to it as the real world, because as we eventually find out, they are literally preparing her to go back to the real world.
Right.
And so once you do realize that at the end, the story makes sense. The whole theme makes sense. Again, I'm going to say the timing, I don't care for it, but this, I do appreciate the concept of what happens in this episode. So I like that they are from the very beginning, almost reteaching her about the real world. When we saw her episode in last season, her parentage seemed to be not about her. Her mom was always like with her little clubs and reading like, her like feminist poetry or whatever it was. And kind of left to her own devices. She didn't have a father. She had no father figure in her life. The only father figure she eventually kind of has, she ends up basically raping. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that it's kind of like a do-over for Sydney. Like she is getting an entire lifetime of actually good parenting.
I want to summarize all of the life lessons, it kind of encapsulate them at the end when we talk about Sid's decision to go back. But let's remember this, because this is demonstrating through this tale that a good upbringing and good parentage, and even later on, Oliver talks about the importance of certain things happening when you're young, feeling safe when you're young so that you know how to feel safe when you're old. None of those things Sid got when she was a child. Right. So it was important that she get all of these things instilled in her. They even say it again at the end as she's leaving. We brought you up. We taught you all of these things. I'm jumping ahead because I do love the culmination of the lessons coming together because of what I think and I hope Sid is about to do. And so we'll get there.
Okay.
But she needed these lessons in order to make the decision to go back and make the next very important steps. Okay, so more time passes. Then we get bedtime story with Melanie. Melanie's laying in bed with Sid. Sid says, tell me a story. And this is where we get Melanie saying, once upon a time, there was a special girl with a special power. She goes on to explain the power and names it empathy, and then explains that it's a hard thing for a little girl to share the feelings, so many feelings with others. And so much so that the little girl started to wonder, where do they end and I begin? So this was, again, a for sure 100% parallel to Sid's actual life. Even though her special power wasn't necessarily empathy, she still, because of her confession, we know that she was still in switching bodies with people all the time just to have sex and to just have, you know, be able to touch somebody. So kind of the same thing, you know, starting to wonder, where does that end and I begin? She never really had any self-actualization.
Yeah, and I think it's almost like her way of rebranding her power. You know what I mean? Like, instead of her thinking of it how she used to think of, it's like, here's a positive spin on how you should think of your power.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
good point. So we see the wolf start creeping on Cynthia in the next scene. He starts telling her about the things she's missing in the real world, like her mother with vomit in her hair, and I guess her boyfriend Kenny, who was a bad drug abuser and probably abused Cynthia too. But the wolf is very seductive, and she tries to resist him, but eventually he woos her with some drugs and some light bulb metaphors about how she, a light bulb is so great in a dark room because it shines so brightly. And so she leaves with him.
Yeah, we've talked about men saying daddy being creepy, but he made saying baby really creepy. Come on, baby. The way he said, oh man, he went from being kind of a ridiculous funny person in this episode to being like super just creepy and just like, yeah, like he sleazes the hell out of her and she goes for it.
Well, this is where I really think we can start to draw the parallel that the wolf is the metaphor for the real world, right? The wolf is, or the direct correlation to the real world in this particular story.
Right.
And that's why when Melanie, you know, came out and said, we're trying to raise our daughter in a world that's good. We don't need, you know, we don't need you bringing the real world into
right.
it. So he is the grit and the grime and the, all the things that really do exist in the real world that people, that real adults have to face, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, all again, right. he's kind of the idea of, instead of taking the time to actually watch your kids, even when it might be hard, and teaching them all good lessons, letting them just go off by themselves, grow up too fast, you know.
We see that later.
Yeah, and I think it's a good metaphor. It's a good idea and a metaphor for literally today's culture, of the sense of just let kids have, you know, YouTube and internet and they'll raise themselves type of thing. And this is the problem. You give them ultimate knowledge and they're going to learn about chlamydia and herpes and the Holocaust and everything that the idea of, you know, we see, and I'm going to get a little over the top here for what our podcast usually is, but it, you know, 5-year-olds don't need to show up at political protests and things like that. Let them be innocent for their childhood.
As long as they can. Yeah. I 100% agree. It's too, their kids grow up way too fast. I hate it. I hate it for them. And you know, what can you do? That's a very topical thing to actually bring up, because our next scene is where more time has passed. Sid is maybe 11 or 12 at this point, and she's sitting at the kitchen table getting the sex talk from Melanie.
Right.
Which was, fortunately, we as viewers came in at the tail end of it, but it sounded like it was going pretty straightforward. As it would. Melanie seemed to be sticking to the facts and very matter of fact about it, which was great. We hear Melanie ask, "Do you have any questions?" And here's our punchline. Sid says, "What's chlamydia?" And here's where I wish they had cut away, but they didn't. Melanie goes into a very accurate description of what it is. And Sid's reaction was the best. She just looks at her and says, "Bodies are weird."
Yeah.
Which was pretty much my exact same thought when I started learning about those things. So I get it, you know. That's the way a kid should react when
they
hear about a virus on a vagina.
Right.
I'm sorry. That's how they should be. That's weird, you know. That's a kid reaction.
Right, absolutely. And they're going to get into it more, especially when Oliver and Sid have a talk later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we next see Sid having dreams about her life as an adult. These are scenes from previous episodes, some horror, some loving scenes with David. And but Sid is clearly dreaming them. She's scared. She's making noises in her sleep. Melanie and Oliver hear her and discuss whether she'll decide to go back or not. And Melanie says, well, you know, if she feels unresolved and still feels like she's got things she needs to do, then she will make the decision to go back. And Oliver's just like, why would anybody want to go back? And then Melanie wistfully says, still, I feel like I know her from before. And Oliver reminds her there was no before for them. And then Sid is awake, and Melanie asks her to come over and tell them about her dream, and she says she forgot. What did you think of her nightmares or her dreams? And I want to get through the puzzle of Melanie and Oliver. I don't want to just accept that they're just humdrum, accepting this is where they live now and this is their life now, and that there was no before for them. You know, I don't want that to be the finality for them.
You know, thinking about it, just even from what we talked about earlier, I think maybe they both realized how one, remember, even before season two, that they were apart for years. Mm-hmm. That mm-hmm. Oliver went chasing the astral plane, was gone for years. Melanie had to suffer through that, and she was obviously bitter, which is what Farouk pounced on.
Right.
Then they both are mentally kidnapped and tortured by Farouk. Oliver is literally tortured by David.
Right.
So it makes sense that after all this, that they do decide that, especially after Oliver has lived kind of a posh life, that they decide to run away and kind of just screw this. Let's go somewhere where we know that, you know, yeah, there's confusion. Yeah, there might, and challenges we haven't had, but it is a life where we don't have to deal with the dangers and the problems that we felt like we had to fight before. So it makes sense that they would have ran away to this kind of place where we make our own.
And, okay, so more to come on that, because I want to talk about, we should have set this up to say that they are also dressed like country bumpkins. You know, Melanie's hair is long and scraggly and in a bandana, and she's wearing like a you know, old timey kind of bustier shirt thing and a skirt, you know, and it's, you know, it's, well, I don't know how to describe that style. You're the fashion expert here.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, to me, again, it's, they ran away and it's almost like people right. who, you know, retire and go off the grid type of thing.
But the reason I mentioned their clothes and their look specifically, and like, you know, Oliver's in like torn pants that are, you know, just fall just right above his ankles, and, you know, a vest and a straw hat kind of stuff like that. But so the reason I mentioned that is because at the end, when they get a wardrobe change, and that's when Sid, you know, recognizes them from who she really remembers them as being. And if I'm not mistaken, what they are changed into is the same look and clothes and everything that they're wearing when we see them in the Ice Cube.
I thought so too.
So I'm almost thinking that they must go to the Ice Cube after Sid leaves them.
I think so. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, think of it as people who retire and decide that they're tired of, like, especially if they've lived in cities their whole life, they go move to Montana on a ranch somewhere and live like a simple life. I think that's what they were doing. It was almost like their way of retiring to a simplified concept. They're in the country before, and yes, they did have the wolf kind of badgering them, but they were kind of able to avoid them until they have this kid.
The metaphor for the real world nagging them to come back into the real world.
Right.
And they're resisting.
Well, but so now think about it. So now they've sent Sid, which feeling like she's going to do what they need her to do. And now to escape the real world or even the pressures of real world, they go seclude themselves in the Ice Cube.
The Ice Cube world is one that the wolf can't blow down.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Okay, see, we're getting there. Won't it be great if in typical Marvel fashion, Noah Hawley probably won't do it just because it is such a Marvel thing, but wouldn't it be great if after episode 8 there's a post-credit scene and it's Melanie and Oliver in the Ice Cube just you know...
That's what I told you. I thought that if we ever did see, didn't think we'd get a whole episode. I thought anything, we'd get just almost a bookend, an epilogue of them. Maybe.
But if it comes after the credits, like the Marvel movies do, you know, that would be the place to put it.
I would like it. I would be totally for that.
Okay. Me too. I just want to apologize if any thunder is picking up on this recording. All of a sudden the sky has opened up here and it is crazy thundering outside. So hopefully that's not affecting this recording.
I haven't heard anything.
Okay, good. So we get more scenes of Sid having nightmares, and the wolf is outside kind of watching, and he continues to huff and puff, and eventually he does blow their house down. Yep. And as we see just kind of them laying in their beds with no house around them, finally Oliver agrees they do have to move. So we cut to the next scene where it's several more years have gone by, and there's a voiceover talking about how it's the lean years now, and they had to move from the woods to the gutter, and their daughter, now they just refer to her as daughter, still calling each other husband and wife, but now they say, where's daughter? Oliver approaches Melanie, says, where's daughter? And she's 16 now, as she reminds Oliver when he walks into the house. She's working on her math problems. And I was glad they did this. They needed to do this. It was the same actress from the Time Demon episode. Yep. So she was really good, I thought. They have a little conversation, her 16-year-old self. Oliver starts to discuss the real world with her. She keeps saying there's something like that. She feels like there's something she's supposed to do. And he said, this is where Oliver talks to her about the importance of the order of things and how it's important for a child to feel safe. That's extremely important in a child's development. And in order, now there's sirens and everything going by. It's really crazy out there. I'm sorry. I hope it's not picking up. It's so loud right now. He starts telling her that children have to feel safe in order to become adults who feel safe. That was pivotal to Sid's development. She never felt safe as a child, therefore never could feel safe as an adult. This was critical conversation right here. And Oliver tells her that she also still has to, it's not time for her to go yet. She also still has to learn about love, because without love, everything goes to hell. And ding, 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 love is another recurring discussion or talking point. We hear it later on. And of course, who deserves love? Who's always asked for love? And without love, everything goes to hell. I mean, it's just perfect writing. It's really, really good.
Yeah, and the recurring theme last season was, it's not the world we have to save, it's love. If we save love, we say love is what we have to save. And so that is a recurring theme. And I liked it as the kind of turnaround for Sid, because she never really, she was ruined at such a young age in real life, in the real world. And so now they are kind of redoing her past, where she learns love and learns the fact that she should try to fix things with love, as opposed to fixing things with begrudging, you know, or revenge or going after things. And so it's about, and as we'll see in a little bit, it's about trying to help other people as opposed to me first, which is what she has reverted to right. This season. And so, yes, they are definitely reprogramming Sid.
100%, because the two things that she never got as a child, feeling safe or feeling love, kind of the same problems David's had too, you know, which is why I think they were drawn together in the first place. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but I loved that conversation that Oliver said to her, and letting us know that this story of Sid growing up here in the astral plane was still going to continue. This is where, at this point in the episode, I was like, how much longer are they going to keep doing this? So next we see Sid walking down the street. You know, they're living in just dirty, filthy city streets now. Still in like old timey world, you know? And so Sid is walking down the street. She sees a box on the street, and there is a beating heart in the box. A woman approaches her, and as she and says something, I think sort of crude, she has two children in tow, a little girl who is horribly made up with just tons of makeup and just really terrible looking clothes. And then a slightly older boy who's wearing a long trench coat and looks like he's never been out in the sun in his entire life. And as Sid looks at them, looks at the three of them, she realizes the woman is Cynthia, and Cynthia recognizes her as well. So they at first appear happy to see each other. Cynthia introduces the two kids as her own, and their names are Sweetie and Blue. Not sure which is which. The little girl, let's just say she's Sweetie, or maybe she's Blue. She's wearing a blue skirt. We'll call her Blue. She has a bottle of vodka in her hand. And this girl's probably what, five or six.
Yeah.
He offers vodka to Sid. The boy, you know, kind of opens up his trench coat and is selling some crap in his pockets and offers to sell whatever. I couldn't figure out what it was.
They were choker chains,
I guess. What is
that? They were necklaces. Like they were all gold necklaces.
Okay. Well, nice and weird. And they're very dirty and filthy. And clearly, Cynthia's, you know, still on drugs. Cynthia does ask if mom and dad remember her. And Sid assures her, yes, they talk about her all the time. Then Cynthia, this was very weird because it really put them in this again, bringing real world back into this. I guess it wasn't weird because they start talking about real world things that are clearly not present in their life. Cynthia says, invites Sid over to their place for video games and cereal and, you know, things that are just, you know, haven't really been talked about in Sid's life. And then she also says Jerome would love to see her too. And that's when we realize Jerome is the wolf. Sid kind of peers into their home and sees a lot of fire and brimstone and is just freaked out and runs off. And as she's running off, the creepy little girl, Blue, is holding the heart from the box, which is still beating, and says, "Don't forget your heart." I take from this scene again, Sid's lesson, don't forget your heart. It's all these little punchlines at the end of each of these scenes that I think if we string those together, we get the full lesson here.
Yeah, fuck those kids. I didn't like them.
No.
No, not that I didn't like them. I mean, they were fine in the show, but they were weird. They were creepy.
They were creepy.
I didn't like that boy, his face. I didn't like it. I do think that Oliver does refer to the wolf as Jerome earlier in the episode. I think he calls him by that name.
Okay.
But Cynthia, I got this weird feeling from Cynthia, the way she talked, because she kind of would like start talking about something and then stop and then start like almost saying something completely different, which was very drug addicty. Mm-hmm. But I almost felt like they had her, or at least she was mimicking Lenny from earlier in the season, because that's how Lenny reminded me when, especially in the tea party scene, the Mad Hatter tea party scene, right, when she's talking to Squirrel, like where she kind of be saying something and then go back to like something else, and she had a very Lenny like cadence to her when she was talking there, like especially weird Lenny. So it reminded me a lot of that. I liked her performance there. Those kids weirded me out too much. I didn't like them. But I did, I appreciated the scene, but too creepy for me.
Think about this, and we'll really get there in an upcoming scene, but think about drawing a parallel between Cynthia and David as far as how Sid treats Cynthia versus how Sid has treated David in a down and out time in their lives. So I think that the Cynthia character was the like the stand-in for David in this fable.
Mm-hmm.
So Sid's had a little bit of an awakening here to Cynthia's life in the quote unquote real world. So later that night in bed, she tells Melanie she's never going to go to the real world. She doesn't want that, any of that. And Melanie tells her that the real world needs her and that all of those bad things can be fixed. And that the reason that she and Oliver are helping her, helping Sid, is because they're helping her become the person she needs to be in order to save the world. And then Melanie says to her, we're not put on this earth for ourselves. You know that, right? And Sid makes up her mind that it's time to save Cynthia. And Oliver comes home and they're putting their plan together. And he's a little bit unsure about this. And Sid says, you taught me to be a good person. And this is what good people do. So we talked about love already. And now we're talking about being a good person. This is what good people do. So we had someone who deserves love, someone who is a good person. Again, really good use of that phrasing. It was key right here as Sid decides that Cynthia is needs to be saved.
Yeah,
I
didn't realize how much they like do repeat the whole like mm-hmm. good person love thing.
So are you liking it more now? Are you getting there?
We still got some ways to go.
All right. Anything else you want to say about these scenes, or should we move right into the creepy house that Cynthia's living in?
Yeah, let's move into the kidnapping.
Mm-hmm. We get the glance of the front porch. The kids are out there. A bottle of vodka rolls in. Of course, we know this is part of the great kidnapping caper, because of course, if a bottle of vodka rolls in, they're going to pick it up and start drinking it, which knocks them out.
That's what I would do. I don't know. Yeah.
So once they're knocked out, our team is quickly able to get in the house and apprehend Cynthia. They put a bag over her head and put her in the wagon and start rolling her home. And Sid and Oliver, Sid asks Oliver as they're wheeling her home, you know, do you think that she'll be okay? And, you know, he says, yes, she's been on drugs. You know, it's going to take some time. And then Sid starts asking Oliver, about the rock wall that they built when she was younger. And why did they build that rock wall? It didn't serve any purpose. And he draws the parallel to the rock wall about a lesson in working hard and how important it is. He said, we wanted to teach you that it's that working hard is important. What do you make of this conversation?
I don't know. Toward the show, I liked the conversation. It felt like as a father of a daughter, I was like, I didn't even remember that one. I'm going to use that line.
For sure. I think it's letting Sid know that what she's up against is not going to be easy, but she can't be afraid to face it just because it's going to take hard work. She was taught that hard work pays off.
Right. It's also that lesson of just you should be up to working hard regardless. Like, you should be a hard worker. Don't take the easy way out, or don't just pass something up because it seems like it may be hard.
Oh, you mean like try to time travel and undo everything as an easy way out is not really the answer. You got to work hard to fix things if you break them.
Yeah, I guess that would work out.
That'll work. All right. So they've got Cynthia back in their house. She is feral. She's kind of growling, and they've kind of got her tied to a chair. Sid sits down in front of her and says, that she understands that Cynthia thinks that she's had a bad deal in life and that she doesn't deserve love. But Sid's here to assure her that she does deserve love. And then she tells her that she loves her and asks her to come home. And Jerome, here we go. Jerome arrives at the door. He's come to take Cynthia back. Oliver goes out into the street with him and says, luckily, he still has a few tricks. And the motherfucking rap battle begins.
I'm the old wizard who lives in the shoe. Slick Mac Daddy from the Ice Cube. My body's quite muscular, bloodstream's corpuscular. If you step to me, fuckers, you'll be sorry, sir. Oh, yes, you'll be sorry.
I think the lyrics were hilarious. I think whoever wrote it, if Noah Hawley wrote this, he is a genius. We already know he's a genius, but... I think that this is ultimately the words are draw the meaning I'm drawing from them is what the wolf is saying. And so we do remember, wait, I do want to say too, we do remember that Oliver uses music to fight. We've seen this before. Because at this point, my husband is like, I'm out. You know, like Sean was in on this show for a couple weeks. I really felt like I had sucked him in. And all he had to hear was this episode had a rap battle. And was a completely bottle episode that strayed from the main plot. And he had zero interest in it. And he just happened to walk in and see the rap battle. And he was like, this is the stupidest shit ever. And I was like, no, it's not. I was defending it all the way, but he wasn't buying it. But
I know this is the episode that I know, like, Tim Andrews finally decided to come back in.
God.
What the fuck? Oh, fuck this. Yeah. Why did I approve this?
I thought it was really good. So ultimately, the wolf's words are the real world. He's fighting for the real world. He's talking about how there's no escape from it. Oliver is just talking about how he's a mystical man and he's got the power to escape those things. You know, he manages to get lines in about both his cock and his balls. In the end of it all, though, however, Oliver makes Jerome cry. But, of course, Jerome is faking it, as we find out later. But once Jerome starts crying, Cynthia comes to his defense and says, please don't kill him, please don't kill him, and says that she has to leave with him. And Oliver asks why, and she just thanks him and says that she they belong together, and then they leave. But as they leave, we see Jerome kind of turn and give that little wink and nod that he, you know, he did this, he faked it.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of, you know, the concept of like a battered woman syndrome, where even when she realizes he's wrong for her and everyone's telling her that he's wrong for her, it just takes him to plead apologetic, and he gives the bad man was mean to me.
Well, okay, I want to take it even a little higher, because I didn't go battered woman syndrome. I went that this is a direct parallel how in the real world, how when somebody doesn't get their way, they can just cry and throw a big fit like all the little crybabies on social media. And, you know, people who don't like how the real world's going, so they can just complain and start a hashtag about it. I really thought that this was making a reference to that, about how you're just going to cry, get your way, and then, you know, now you've won because you've cried to get your way.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that for sure. I will speak of the rap battle. I thought it was awesome. If you are a fan of Jermaine Clement or Flight of the Conchords, you've known that I think he's the hip-hop-opotamus. He's been waiting to do this for a while, so I'm glad that he got a chance to do that. I did read an article, actually, about this whole rap battle episode, and it was an interview with Clement and Noah Hawley, and I think Hawley wrote the episode knowing there was going to be a battle between him and this wolf. Mm-hmm. He wrote the lyrics before he realized it was going to be a rap. Let them rap it. I think both of them were nervous about doing the rap because they weren't sure how it would sound. He even let Clement go through the lines and rewrite anything he wanted to. He said he didn't rewrite very much of it, so it was mostly Noah Hawley's words.
It was incredible. It was incredible. And it, again, went on very long. I couldn't believe it. Just when he thought it was done, it was. It kept going. So... at the conclusion of this, Melanie and Oliver are, this is where they're transformed into their old look, or into their normal everyday look. It's the same hair and clothes that, that they have in the Ice Cube world. And they tell Sid she's ready, at which point she becomes adult Sid, Rachel Keller Sid, who we know. So as she looks up and sees Melanie and Oliver, it's like she's seeing them for the first time and having full recognition of them. And she's totally happy to see them. She tells them she has to go back. And Melanie tells her to remember that it's not us or them. It's us and them. And Sid says, wait, aren't you coming with me? And they get, you know, they get really sad. This is a bittersweet reunion, because it doesn't last very long. You can see love from both sides there, between Melanie and Sid especially. And so it's really sad that Melanie just says, no, we're not, you know, we can't go. And then she just tells her, you can do this. Remember everything we taught you.
Yeah, this kind of pissed me off too. I thought it was a little bullshitty where they, hey, we're going to teach her to go back and fight, but we're not going to go back and fight. I hate that.
Right. That just makes me think it's because they can't. Because why would they teach her all of these lessons if they're not willing to go execute on those lessons themselves?
But if she can go back, why can't they go back?
Because of Farouk. Farouk's got them. So it's got to be, right?
But David has her. And this is what brings me to that point of, it doesn't make sense of, if someone... It's one thing if you lose your mind and you end up in the astral plane, that makes sense a little bit. But if someone if a powerful mutant who is known to steal people's identities and brains and personalities and souls, if they steal your soul, then
it's true.
Why are you not there? You know, why are you not inside of their head? Why was Oliver there the whole time he was in Farouk's head? Because he seemed to be in Farouk's, at, you know, mansion or wherever he kept him with Lenny in that pool area while he had him. So why wasn't he there to begin with? And we never saw Melanie anywhere other than her body. So we never know where we actually did see her at the pool at one point. Mm-hmm. So are they still in Farouk's mind? Are they still in David's mind? Are David and Farouk the same person? They're all in their own mind. Oh my gosh. So many questions coming.
All right, well, let's talk about the final scene here, and then we'll talk about what's happening from the very short little tiny trailer they gave us. So many questions, and now I am starting to panic that we're not going to get all of those questions that you just said. I am starting to think I think it's going to be, some things are just a case, they're all sirrah, you know, where it's just going to be the way it is, and we're not going to get definitive answers. And that, okay. I want answers. I'll be okay. I do want those answers, though.
Hey, you know what? You're a good person. You deserve answers.
Thank you. I'm a good person and deserve a lunchbox, and I got one.
You got one.
Yep. Okay. Right. So I'll be sure to tweet out some pictures of it. Okay. So next scene is Sid returns to the airship. She wakes up, stands up, ties her hair back, and we cut to commercial. And I'm looking at the clock like, oh my God, we have 10 minutes left of this show. Nothing has been accomplished.
Was there any point to her tying her hair back?
I don't know, except for the funny line when male Carrie sees her and it says, like, something's different about you. I think, again, that's the parallel for she has a different outlook on life and he can sense it, but also it's just a surface level humor about her hair, because I don't know that she's ever worn hair like that.
Her bangs should have grown back out, and then she goes back to original ponytail Sid, and then she is old school Sid.
Right. Or she should have just come back as Aubrey Plaza.
Oh, well, I would have loved this episode. This is my favorite episode.
Right. Me too. Okay. So Sid sees the weird time travel door that's pulsing in and out. And then we see Carrie bandaging a very wounded Carrie. And Carrie asks him if they've lost. And he kind of, one of her eyes is totally swollen shut. I don't think we've ever seen Carrie this battered before. She is in bad, bad shape.
Well, I mean, technically, you thought she was dead last episode.
It's amazing that she's even alive, right? That's how she looks. She looks like left for dead. And so she says, even she's speaking very weakly, and she asks if they've lost. Carrie kind of confirms to her that they had indeed lost, and she gets very scared and asks if he thinks that they're going to vanish when David changes everything. And at that point, Sid walks in and says she can fix it. Again, more talk of fixing. She can fix it. She can go through the time door and get to him. And Carrie agrees that he'll build bracelets for all of them, and they'll all three go. And so, of course, he can build the bracelet in like 5 minutes, so that's what he does. He also tells her that he thinks the Time Eaters are back. Then they're putting on the bracelets, and female Carrie, tells Carrie that Sid is going to need her in this other world, and that she can't fight in the state that she's in. And what was in my favorite scene of the whole episode, because of Bill Irwin, because of what the expression on his face and how well he sold the pain that he had to absorb. And I always love a Carrie and Carrie melding. You know, we haven't seen it in a while.
Not just Bill Irwin, but let's give credit to Amber Midthunder.
Oh, sure.
Awesome. Yeah.
She really was. But so they both realize what needs to happen here, because Carrie so meekly says, but she'll need me too. And female Carrie says, but you can sit to do what you need to do. And she's got a point. And we knew that Carrie has this power, that male Carrie has this power. We just haven't seen it on full display, I don't think, since season one.
Right.
So we see him wrap his arms around her and absorb her. And the next thing we see is his face taking on all of the injuries that she had. And it is just this slow kind of, but also quick, because you don't take on injuries that quickly. Right. So you're seeing these injuries just kind of unfold, and the sheer agony it is causing him, because he's not a spring chicken either. Right.
Right.
He's not going to be, he can't do this over and over and over all the time for her.
Right.
But it's so devastating. In fact, that when Carrie comes back out of him, he collapses into a wheelchair. He can't even hardly talk or hold his head up. But female Carrie is completely healed. And so they get through that time door, the three of them, just right in time before the time demons are attacking them.
Yeah, Carrie even waits for a minute so she can kick one in the face. They definitely set that they which this is another thing that somewhat annoyed me because I love this whole scene.
Yeah. But
then they set it up as if she was like, after doing all that, they set it up like she was about to get killed.
Oh, I know. And that's when she was like, no.
Yeah, she gets a slow motion, no. And then she just like kicks one in the face and like walks through. She's like,
yeah, she's back to full power.
But that's what I love.
I did. I love
it. Last line.
Yeah, so her confidence is so up because they are through the door. The three of them made it. Carrie triumphantly looks up at Sid and declares they're going to win. And Cinnamon Girl starts to play. And our title card unfolds. The title card is made of odd random objects like the stuff that Oliver was collecting. Right. And then the closing credits roll. So yeah. Title card at the end again. Great ending song. That Cinnamon Girl was great.
Yeah, I love the ending. I love the scene with Carrie and Sid, I suppose. I just don't believe her, like, or I don't know. I don't get the same feeling when she walks in and she's like, I'm going to fix it. Like, she just, I don't know. There's just something about it that I don't buy. I don't buy, like, when she says that.
I know it's hard to think about Sid as being the ultimate hero in this show, and I don't think that that's the case. I think we have to see this group of once would be friends, they have to come back together and they have to work together. And Sid could lead that charge. I think that Sid has the full realization now that she can save David through making him feel safe and loved and deserving. I think she's going to play into that. I think there's more to this. I'm a good person. I deserve love. It's been drilled over and over and over again. It was peppered throughout this whole episode. Sid has the full realization of what she needs to do. And I don't think it's destroy David. I think it's love David. She learned that with what she had to do with Cynthia.
All right. So let's do this. Let's talk really quick about the preview for next week. Let's each give a couple predictions for the last two episodes of what we think might.
How can we predict?
I have a very weird theory that I'm not sure really works out. And it has nothing to do with necessarily the full ending, but I do have a weird theory about David and what we might be seeing coming on. So let's go through what you have for the preview.
Well, I didn't take full notes on the preview. It was short, and all I can really say is, I mean, there was a lot of David in it. It was a lot of trippy scenes of, you know,
we're
David.
We're going back to...
But what's for sure happening is it's Charles and Farouk in Morocco. I just wrote Charles and Farouk in Morocco and tons of exclamation points because we're going to get it. We talked about wanting it back in the episode with Charles and Gabrielle.
Right.
And now we're for sure going to get it. And so I think that David's plan when he got Switch out of the sleep chamber, his plan was to go to this Morocco point and fix it there, get involved in this battle somehow between Farouk and Charles.
Right. All right. So,
and now we know Sid's going to be there too. So, let me hear your prediction. I don't really have one, but I'd love to hear yours and see if I can formulate one.
Not necessarily a prediction, but kind of a weird theory I kind of put together. So if you remember last week, we talked about the watch switch that David puts on Farouk, right? He takes his, and then we even get confirmation this week that there are these time travel watches.
Mm-hmm. There's more than one, clearly. Then, in an instant.
And then both of us even wondered, well, if he put it on Farouk, how did he go back in time? Right? So, like, how did he go back? Because they jumped through the door at the end.
How did they push him into the time between time?
Because he puts it on Farouk, which lets him get pushed through the door. Uh-huh. But then how does he go back with Switch immediately afterwards if he did not have the watch on him anymore?
David, right.
So here's what I think. Here's a weird theory, and it might be completely wrong, and next week I'll immediately say I was wrong. I wonder. Mm-hmm. If everything we saw in that Charles and Gabriel episode actually happens after this, when he jumps back without the watch, if that's why the door is now like pulsing like it did once they went in there, like why it hasn't done that before, It's pulsing now. It's weirdly opened. And why, when they went back, they couldn't be seen. He's like almost half a ghost. Like, there's a reason why he couldn't go back. And I actually went back to that episode. Now, this could just be a costume design error because they didn't have the idea of the watch yet. But I went back to that episode of the Charles and Gabriel flashback. And when he gets pushed into the hallway and he's telling Switch he wants to go back and he gets all mad and raises his arms, he does not have that watch on. That watch is not on his wrist. Now, again, that could just be a continuity error, which is more likely than what I'm thinking. But there are very
few things. This show doesn't make continuity.
Yeah, that's why I say there are very few things that are not deliberate in this show. But that's a very, very minute detail that very few people would notice. And so, that's one weird theory. Here's my second weird theory.
Okay. I'm digging that theory, but I want to hear your next one.
Here's my second weird theory is that David doesn't necessarily have dissociative identity disorder. All of the different Davids, every time he goes back and changes time, these are all the old past Davids that remember things.
Oh my God.
And so when he eventually is going to go back to being a baby, it's not that he has different personalities. It's that all these past lives and past timelines are still stuck inside of his brain. So, you know, he thinks that when you go back and change the past, click, it erases everything. But that really he will always remember these things and always have this other person who happened to. So, and again, these may not have, these might be completely wrong.
No, I like it. I like them.
These
both
are my out of left field theories that I'm just shooting for and seeing what happens. I've had these weird theories. So,
I mean, what I want to happen is I want a happy ending. I don't want a bittersweet, quote unquote, bittersweet ending like we got with Game of Thrones. I want a happy ending to this. So I think, this is maybe not a prediction. This is just what I'd love to see happen. I'd love to just see it play out to manage our expectations, right? We're going to see what happens with Charles and Farouk in Morocco. David's going to be there, so he's clearly going to influence it. He's probably going to be the catalyst that antagonizes it to start with. So again, it's that time loop thing, right? The Hodor effect is going. So now he's already, I don't know that I agree with the stuff taking place with Gabrielle and David, or Charles takes place after that. See, I don't know, because we know the Morocco visit and the Morocco trip happened during that
scene. We see a scene in the preview of Sid, Carrie, and Carrie. They're walking in through the front yard, and that door is in the front yard.
Okay. So they're still fucking with time so much. So you got to think that if he does go into a time where he's already been before, there's a chance he's going to run into himself having visited before. I don't know. It's going to really get nutso. But let's just, if it plays out, so there's this great big battle. They have to defeat Farouk once and for all. Sid is there. She sees it all going down. She realizes the final push that she needs is she realizes that it was Farouk doing all the manipulation all along. She reminds David, or she approaches David and lets him know that all is forgiven. She understands now. She loves him. He's a good person. He deserves love. She affirms all of that. Maybe at this point, it's too late. We'll put a little twist on it, and we'll say by this point, it's too late. David is too crazed. He's too far gone. He doesn't believe her because she's already tricked him before. So he's naturally thinking this is another trick, and he kills her. And then only then maybe learns that she was being sincere. And that's what really drives him to madness, is that he killed the woman he loves, you know, when he had a chance to make it right. So I don't know. That's a really bleak prediction. I said I wanted it happy, and that just got really sad. I just want Sid to die. I don't want her to be the big hero.
I hope we see at least a scene or a possible future of that preview we got in the season two finale of the actual like Legion comic with the big hair and Lenny.
And Lenny was pregnant in that.
I know. I hope we at least see something like that. But
I want Lenny to come. I want him to figure out how to get Lenny back. But
and I don't. I do think that there will be a somewhat ambiguous ending to this show because of just the way it is. But I do think it'll be. We'll see the worst possible ending, possibly, or even maybe a possible happy ending. And I did joke about this last week or the week before, but I do think it might actually end up, if not the Clockwork's first scene, him as a baby and kind of that everything could happen again type of thing. Like, I think there will be a reset at the end and it'll just be kind of open to this could happen, this could not happen again. Mm-hmm. And there might be like a small change, but maybe it's, he ends up as a baby and Farouk's not there, but maybe we zip into the eyes of the baby and it's actually like David caressing the baby, you know, like an adult David caressing the baby saying, I got you now type of thing. Like,
and so he ultimately evolves into Farouk.
Team Shadow King.
No, Team David. If Sid is able to bring David back from the depths of madness in which he has fallen and has the potential to fall further. So if Sid is able to bring him back, then I'll be okay. I will be okay with her being the person who saves the day. I know she's annoying, but she tied her hair back and she's good to go now, right?
Yeah, right. She's back to ponytails. All right. I think we've covered everything this episode.
Oh, do you like it a little more now? Just a smidge.
Like I said, I appreciate it. And I tweeted that like, this is going to be the one episode I don't rewatch. And then within an hour, I was like, you know what? I will rewatch it, but only once. But I rewatched it. I like it for what it is. It just, and like I said, I called this last week. Mm-hmm. It's the slowdown episode before we just go pedal to the next week. We're going to be upset that it went too fast, I think, and we'll be waiting for the finale.
Yeah, it's ramping up. It's ramping up. And it's, you know, and then Preacher's starting, and it's just going to be so much to watch. This is why I had to get the boys out of the way.
Yeah.
I had to get it all out of the way.
Through all these shows, like, going overlapping, don't they have any sympathy for us? Come on.
So, all right. So we won't go on too long because we're going to be back with another episode within just a few short days. Again, it's our Garth Ennis extravaganza covering the boys and some Preacher just overview of where our characters are before the start of season four. I'm so excited. I can't wait for Sunday night, but really looking forward to speaking with you again and our very special guest. So follow everybody. Follow us on Twitter at MikeTV1. And Dean, tell us your Twitter handle too.
I'm at Rockdale_Tiger on Twitter. And yes, I'm right there with you. We're going to have kind of a couple extra episodes here over the next couple weeks to catch up on all this overlapping. And let's just say we're going to be keeping it canine here in the next couple of weeks with our guests. So yes. Look forward to that.
I can't wait. And yes, we will not be diluting our Legion coverage. So we're going to be released. We talked about how this would be most effective. And we know it's a lot of shows coming into your podcast feed. We do hope that you're enjoying the Legion coverage. But what we decided to stay faithful to Legion as it is ending in its, you know, final two episodes. We didn't want to lump those in with coverage of Preacher also. Those two episodes deserved their own standalone coverage. So we are going to give those shows the proper attention they deserve and give them standalone coverage and also begin standalone coverage of Preacher. So I'm excited for that. I think we're going to have a lot to talk about there with Preacher.
I'm pumped up. Let's get it done. You'll be hearing a lot from us lately.
That's right. All right, radios, everybody, thanks for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.